From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 7th day of November, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, Dave Dickey will update us with all the details of today's agricultural news stories. We'll hear about an update to the FarmDoc website and stories that have to deal with the economy and its impact on agriculture. And closer to the bottom of this half hour, Steve Hilberg of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
In Chicago, on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat at $5.21 a bushel, a penny and a half lower. The March at $5.42, down 1 1/4. And May wheat at $5.56, down a penny for the day. Kansas wheat settled the hard red at $5.68 on the nearby. It finished a nickel higher. From the corn pit in Chicago, 2.5 cents the loss in the nearby December. $3.75.5 the settlement price, once again down 2.5. March contract down 2 cents at $3.93.5, and the May futures at $4.05.5, down 2 cents. July corn at $4.17, finished 2.25 lower on the day. December futures in the corn pit at $4.41 were down 3 cents this afternoon. December oats at $2.34.5, down 3.5. The soybeans finished the November contract 12.25 higher at $9.11.75. January at 9.21, up 15. March at 9.29.5, 14.5 higher. The May at 15 higher, finished at 9.39.5. And the November for next year at 9.47.25, up 11.25 cents on the afternoon. December bean meal at $2.71.70, up $8.90. December bean oil down 27 at $33.90. The numbers from the mercantile exchange side. The livestock, live cattle futures, December contract 92.80, down 50 cents. Febs at 93.55, up 42.5. February feeder cattle, rather November, at 98.95, up 7.5 cents. The Jans at 99.22.5, up 25 cents. And December lean hog futures at 55.40, 57.5 cents higher on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on this Friday afternoon. December crude oil futures are now trading at $62 a barrel. They're up $1.23, but the January futures are $4.54 lower at $61.47. December ethanol at $1.72 and 2 cents, and that's a penny lower on the day. And natural gas at $6.77 and 9 cents, down 2 cents. The RBOB gasoline at $1.34 and 9 cents, up 1 3 tenths for the day. And the diesel fuel trading the heating oil at $1.98 and 4 cents is up 4 1/10 for the day. December futures in the propane at 77.7 cents. Frankly, they're finishing 6.2 cents lower on the afternoon. November gold futures at 733.20, up $2 even. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average currently stands at 88.98, and that's just about 200 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 86.01 is down 0.26 for the day. The CRB index at 256.40 is down 0.7 on the afternoon. Here's what the extended forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says next week, the wet weather system will arrive in western Illinois on Monday morning and the rest of Illinois and Indiana Monday afternoon and evening. That rain will continue in most areas right on through Tuesday. Most of the precip, he says, will fall as cold rain, but some wet snowflakes may mix in across northern sections of the two-state region. On Wednesday, dry weather should come in, and especially into the northern areas of Illinois and Indiana, but rain will likely linger right into the Ohio Valley. For tonight, Ed says, in northern Illinois, cloudy, periods of light snow. In northern Indiana, cloudy, some rain and snow showers. In central sections, cloudy, scattered showers. In the south, mostly cloudy. Lows from 32 in northwestern and west central Illinois to 40 in southeastern Indiana. That for this evening.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Time to talk with Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike. I got to get back to Mike. There he is. Hi, Mike. Good afternoon to you. Sorry about that.
Not a problem.
Button in the wrong place. Happens on occasion. So tell me about this marketplace, and why don't you take a look at it on the weekly basis at the moment?
Okay. I guess the best way to say it is we had a really nice week to start the week off with, Todd, but the grains just showed no follow-through after making the weekly highs on Tuesday. They had light volume again, and it was kind of a repeat of the last 2 weeks, except that there was more bearish rhetoric, more bearish tone in the feed grains in wheat and corn this week than there were the last couple weeks because of this upcoming report by USDA on Monday. We also saw a continued pattern where crude and copper couldn't show any signs of bottoming. But it's interesting, closed down on Jan beans, 12 cents for the week. We could have closed up 48.5 cents, 48.75 cents if we would have kept Tuesday's high. Dees corn down 26 cents on the week, could have closed up 31.5 cents if we could have kept Tuesday's high. Wheat was even more stark, down 15.25 cents for the week, could have been up 51.5 cents if we could have kept it and held on to Tuesday's high. So that's kind of the short and dirty on what this week was all about.
And short and dirty, but as we look at, and I haven't checked out the wheat chart just yet, but we haven't broke through anything that says it's terribly bearish at this point, that it's just more of a sideways and still with inside the trading range. Is that right?
You bring up a good point, and it's interesting because what you just asked me, I was called by Dow Jones Newswires today, and they asked the exact same thing. What do you see technically in the wheat? And it's interesting because when I started looking, we keep dancing around this 200-week moving average. The last 4 weeks in a row, we've tested it. Two of the four, we've stayed above it. The other two of the four, we've stayed below it. It continues to try and find a base. But, again, I think it goes back to the confidence level, the uncertainty about the dollar trend after it initially broke this week, early in the week, and then the freight rates continuing to be soft and the crude oil market continuing to be soft. It seems like the winners in the battle are continue to be the people that pursue the idea that global demand is falling much faster than global supply, and the same here in the United States.
You know, what does that tell you about the longer-term experience for corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Well, I think first and foremost, in the short term, I think we still go with what we talked about on Commodity Week last week. The beans are in the driver's seat because the trade is much more respectful of beans than they are the corn and wheat. And you see that on the weekly numbers. You see that when the breaks in the price happen. They were quickly bought in most days, except for maybe Wednesday, quickly bought in the soybeans. And the report with the potential of a yield cut and the demand staying the same on the balance sheets, that the beans are being looked at as the leader right now to the upside. I think the report on Monday, both the report for supply-demand and also the harvest progress, those two reports together may indeed turn this market back to the upside if we can keep the outside markets contained and not so negative. I say that because the technicals are so overdone, and I got the strong, strong feeling after this blizzard hit in the Western Corn Belt and corn saw no bounce at all that really we're pricing in about as negative a report in corn as maybe we could possibly envision by USDA. And I hate to say that because you never say never with USDA. You know how they can come in and trounce you
right
once you make a statement like that. But it seems like the attitude in Chicago, no one's friendly, no one thinks that there's any demand, and no one cares about the supply. And I guess when I see those three things stack up, it seems to me that maybe we're due for a little bit more upside than downside here.
Well, let's stay on that note. So is it the bean crop that and I'm assuming it is, that we're most worried about in Iowa, Minnesota, and the Dakotas? How much have they got left really out there at this point? I assume it's standing in water, potentially, and they're waiting for a freeze, and that won't be any good. And they'll have big wind, and that might not be so great for a corn crop. At this point, what do you think the potential downside, no pun intended, potentially, might be in those areas for them to bring in that crop?
You know, Iowa was 93% done in beans. North Dakota, this was Monday's numbers. Monday,
right.
North Dakota was 88%. South Dakota, 94%. When I looked at the beans, it looked like they were pretty much out of the woods, but the corn is a whole different story.
Correct.
When I ran the calculations, when you look at Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, and the extreme wetness from rain in Nebraska, you're talking about just under 15 million acres. If you take that at times that 153.9 yield, you're talking about almost 2.5 billion bushels of corn that is still left out in the fields. I mean, I'm using the Monday harvest numbers and then using a weighted average on their planted acres. So I'm not using harvested acres, but I'm using planted. But when you look at production potential losses, you're talking about 2 to 2.3 billion bushels because you're talking about 17% of all the corn planted acres in the country. So I think it's pretty substantial. I think the damage from our South Dakota clients and our Iowa clients and our Minnesota clients, obviously South Dakota, North Dakota much worse, but even the Minnesota and Iowa people are upset about the heavy moisture levels they've seen even before the blizzard and the high winds. Nebraska, I talked to a client in Kearney, Nebraska, Tuesday, and he said they've had 12 inches of rain in 2.5 weeks. How do you get back in the fields before Thanksgiving?
Well, even if they don't, they'll get back in, but how much of the crop will be left, I guess, is the real point. Anybody have experience, recent experience out there with trying to bring a crop in after a freeze has made it and it's been really wet?
I don't think we have in many, many years. I guess the best way to boil it down for us is, with the report coming out and this kind of weather, I guess when we look at it, maybe the economy and the macro fundamentals are indeed curbing our demand for feed grains. They're curbing the demand for crude oil. But by the same token, Mother Nature is curbing a lot of the supply in the southern hemisphere in terms of Argentine and Australian wheat, and it's curbing a lot of the northern hemisphere, you know, feed grain, coarse grain supplies. And the trade, simply put, in my view, just isn't looking at the supply side at all. They just continue to look at this poor, poor demand.
I hate to. I'll keep looking at the supply side with you for just a bit. You mentioned a couple billion bushel out there, but how much you think could potentially be lost? Would we lose half of 500,000?
I would guess we probably, maybe at best, made another 10% gain versus last Monday's harvest numbers. And so, even if I add that 10% onto all four of those states, we're still probably looking at maybe 500 million bushels of loss.
500 million is what
yeah.
I meant.
Yeah, right.
you probably thought 500,000, that's not very much.
I'm pretty bearish.
500 million, yeah.
Yeah, I think 500 million is a good number, Todd. I mean, even if it's 200 or 300 million, you know, you'd think that going into a major report, even if you lose ethanol demand and you lose export demand and maybe you lose livestock demand, you lose all your three major demand categories, they'd be a little bit more respectful and not put us on the major lows going in the end of the week. But, again, it is not a half-full, half-empty scenario. It's all empty because of demand right now.
Right. So that would put us down at what, in your opinion, be it at an 11.5 crop, or are we talking about an 11.7 from the 12.2?
Yeah, you're probably talking about 11.7 from the 12.2. So you're if you get a 1.4, 1.5 carryover on Monday because they've lowered all the demand, then that puts you right back to about a 1.1, 1.2 carryover.
All right. Doesn't that also put it right back at your number?
Well, yeah, and I think that's so convenient that you brought that up. We just have to have our number, doggone it. But I think more importantly, the global numbers are big. You know, there was just an Argentine story that broke on the news wires before we hit the air that they're 70% planted in corn, 2.7 million hectares, but they're worried the other 30% or a vast majority of it may not get planted because of the credit and because of the fertilizer and because of the lower prices. So I just think the trade just it's going from one extreme to the other, from where we were earlier this spring looking at no bearish fundamentals at all, and now they're looking at no friendly fundamentals or bullish fundamentals.
Well, for those who still hold crop, it's always a good idea if everybody's bearish, then maybe she'll turn around eventually.
Well, I think that's a key. You know, putting it back to the producers and what we've talked about, it may be one of those years where the Western Corn Belt basis leads us out of the hole because they've still got the major ethanol production over there. They've still got the major livestock production over there, and this blizzard and this wet weather you would think would turn them back higher faster.
All right, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too, Mike. Mike Zuzlo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. Joins us from his West Lafayette, Indiana office in just a couple of minutes, or actually a few moments. Dave Dickey will be here to take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says that Congress should consider lifting the required ethanol to gasoline blend to 15% from 10% to avert an ethanol surplus. Peterson says he is concerned about a blend wall when ethanol output equals the legal requirement to use the alternative motor fuel. Yesterday, Peterson also said that he will discuss with President-elect Barack Obama's officials his idea to begin work in 2009 on reorganizing the USDA. Reshaping USDA could take a year or two. The last reorganization was in the mid-1990s. Agriculture groups are criticizing a new California law that bans keeping chickens, calves, and pigs in cages, arguing it will increase production costs. California voters on Tuesday passed Proposition 2, which bans the confinement of egg-laying chickens, veal calves, and pregnant pigs. The California Poultry Federation claims it will cost about $1 more to produce a dozen eggs from cage-free chickens. Industry officials say that they expect the Humane Society to push other states to adopt similar measures and to encourage retailers to buy eggs and other products from producers who do not confine chickens and livestock. Rural America could see a great deal of new investment in energy and infrastructure under President-elect Barack Obama's administration, but the trade-off means perhaps that larger farmers will see higher taxes and livestock producers could face more regulations as well. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack says, quote, "For the first time in a long, long time, agriculture is a key player. I think that ag is at the center of that discussion in terms of what our future policy is going to be and how we are going to continue to produce energy in a way that responds to the climate change challenge, but at the same time provides opportunities to rural parts of the country." The Bank of England slashed its benchmark interest rate by 1.5 percentage points today, a bold cut that far exceeded economists' expectations and reflected fears that Britain is headed for a prolonged deep recession. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank cut its main lending rate by 50 basis points today as the Eurozone economy slows. The move takes the ECB's benchmark rate to 3.25% and is the second cut in just under a month following an emergency 50 basis points reduction made on October 8th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can hear both of those programs on our website anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll record Commodity Week at 4:30 this afternoon and post it to the site by about 6 o'clock this evening. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets. Up next, how the current financial crisis impacts agriculture and changes decision-making for producers is the focus of 5 new reports prepared by the members of the University of Illinois Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics. I'll have more on the update at the FarmDoc website. The 5-part package is available on the University of Illinois Extension's FarmDoc website. The address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. The FarmDoc team prepared the articles to illustrate the impact of the current financial crisis on the agricultural economy and decision-making. The team leader for the project and professor of agricultural economics, Scott Irwin, says it focuses on 5 main topics: the nature of the financial crisis, impacts on the short-term availability of credit, the connection between the financial meltdown and commodity prices, crop insurance decisions, and land rental and lease negotiations. FarmDoc's policy specialist Nick Paulson takes on the first topic, how we got there. The simplest and most direct answer to how we got where we are today is that over the past few years, too many bad mortgage loans were made in the United States, explains Paulson. And then, of course, he goes on. And then Paul Ellinger and Bruce Sherrick step into the conversation to discuss the financial markets in agriculture. And so goes the set of five topics. You can read them all online at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. The online reading should be a good primer for those wanting to attend the FarmDoc team's Farm Economics Summit scheduled around the state of Illinois in December. Those day-long meetings kick off the 16th of the month in Mount Vernon and move through Bloomington, Galesburg, and Sycamore over the four-day run. Registration and a meeting agenda for the 2008 Illinois Farm Economics Summit will soon be posted. Complete details, of course, can be found at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the cash grain bids and basis. And we're joined this afternoon by Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Well, tell me about cash bids first.
Okay. Basis has been quiet this week. We've seen steady progression and tightening of bids, but corn is steady at 25 under at Paxton, 30 under for new crops, so that's unchanged since last Friday. Beans, last Friday we were 33 under, seeing a little bit of improvement there at a 29 under nearby, and January still sitting at 30. So an inverse on soybeans, that's something that's been a while since we've seen.
I was up in your area, and it looks pretty much like everything's done at this point. Are we really close?
We're close. I'm 85 to 90% done on corn, 95% done on soybeans. We probably have 1.75 to 2 million bushel out on the ground, so the piles are done.
Have you talked to anybody out in the West, Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, to see how well they're faring through the rough weather?
No, I haven't. And you look at the weather coming through, they've had more rain than we have, more accumulation and snow, which we can do without. But I haven't really seen or talked to anybody out there recently.
Earlier in this report, Mike Zuzulo suggested that because, and we only have about 30 seconds left, so you can either agree or disagree, that because they were going to have a tough time finishing that up and they have so much demand in the way of livestock and ethanol plants that basis may be the one that leads us out of the lows here out in the western areas. Would you agree or disagree?
I would say western basis might be better. Our exports have been disappointing on the corn side. So we need something to kind of grab the ball, and you have to run through so many bushels per day for plant or for livestock, and if it's not moving, they're going to have to make it move.
Okay, thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
It's National Bittersweet Chocolate with Almonds Day. The cultivation of seeds that produce chocolate date back at least 3 millennia to Central America and Mexico. The earliest documented use was around 1100 BC, with the Maya and Aztecs making bitter chocolate beverages. On this day in agricultural history in 1807, Tom Brassey was born. An early English railway contractor, he built railway lines worldwide. He laid tracks in England, France, the Netherlands, Italy, Prussia, Spain, Canada, India, Australia, and South America. In all, he built more than 6,500 miles of track. In 1872, the Mary Celeste sailed for Genoa from New York with a cargo of 1,700 barrels of alcoholic spirits. The ship was found abandoned near the Azores, the captain, his wife and daughter, and seven crewmen missing, and no sign of violence. The captain, his family, and the crew were never seen again. In 1923, Michael Joseph Owens died. He is credited with the invention of the automatic glass bottle-making machine. And in 1928, Norton David Zinder was born. An American biologist and molecular geneticist, he studied a species of salmonella and discovered how genetic material is transferred from one bacterial cell to another by the means of a virus. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time to take a look now at what's been happening in agricultural weather. And here to give us forecast for the weekend and next week is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here on campus. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start with a chilly forecast for the Midwest this weekend.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a change from what we started out the month of November with temperatures running in the 70s. We had record highs from Minnesota to Iowa to Illinois, the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, but that all came to an end yesterday as that front pushed through last night. And now temperatures are in the low 40s in most areas, upper 30s at Aurora right now, and even upper 40s down in southern Illinois. That's running below normal for what we should be here early in November, and it looks like that is going to be relatively the pattern for the next week to 10 days, maybe even longer. You know, we've been putting off the cool November weather, and now it's here. But we are in for a cold, blustery weekend as a strong upper-level low moves across the Midwest. And so I wouldn't expect to see a whole lot of sunshine this weekend. Best chances are probably early in the day before the atmosphere begins to warm up a bit and clouds form. And could even see some the white stuff around northern and maybe even central Illinois this weekend in the form of flurries.
Will there be a break in the showers before we get them again early in the week?
It looks like anything that occurs this weekend will be pretty light and scattered. But by the time we get into midday, late Monday, there's another system that looks like it'll be coming out of the southern plains, and it could spread some light rain and showers across Illinois and Indiana Monday into Tuesday. Then we get some weak high pressure moving across, and then another system that would likely come through late in the week. So I think we're pretty much done with long stretches of dry weather for the foreseeable future. So producers that weren't able to get finished this week might have a little bit of a tough time squeezing in days over the next week to 10 days.
And speaking of that, have you been watching the western area, and what can you tell us about Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota, and what kind of ability they'll have to get into the field?
Well, there was actually 2 to 3 inches of snow across southwestern Minnesota from this storm that clobbered the Dakotas, and it's currently snowing, and actually snow and light rain across that region right now. We're seeing some snow flurries into northern Iowa and western Wisconsin, and light rain in there, and that's going to tend to be the active area. It's going to be where the coldest and most unstable areas over the weekend, so perhaps by Sunday and Monday they'll start to improve up there. The system that we're expecting through here early in the week probably will stay south of Iowa, Minnesota, and much of Wisconsin, so they'll have a chance to dry out there.
All right, Steve, thanks much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Thanks for joining us here on the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Be sure to log on at WILLAG.org for Commodity Week. We'll post it there by 6 o'clock this evening. You have a good afternoon.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.